From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Even if you've listened carefully to the various health care plans being promoted by the presidential candidates, I'll bet you haven't heard them talk about appropriate care. All of them have fleshed out plans dealing with who will be covered, who will pay, how much their plans will cost, but their plans deal mainly with health care after a person has fallen ill. But in medical circles, appropriate care has started being discussed. That's the case here in Mecklenburg County, where today's third public health forum will focus on the topic, and we've invited someone to speak about it who has witnessed firsthand how well it works. Dr. Gloria Wilder is medical director of mobile health programs at the Washington, D.C. Children's Hospital, where I got my tonsils out, by the way, and president and CEO of Core Health. She is also an expert consultant for the Oprah Winfrey Show and George Washington University's 2004 Physician Humanitarian of the Year. Thank you for being in, Charlotte. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you. Thank you. I'd just like to make one correction. I'm actually the former medical director of Children's Hospital Mobile Unit and now president and CEO of Core Health.
Okay. Well, there you go. I was grossly misinformed, and you need a new PR person. An advocate for access to care for underserved populations, Dr. Wilder joins us in our studio, obviously, along with Dr. Stephen Keener, medical director for the Mecklenburg County Health Department. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Nice to have you with us. About how many people around this country, as we talk about these healthcare plans that the candidates are promoting, how many people in this country, how many people in Mecklenburg County have limited to no access to healthcare because either they are uninsured or have no insurance?
Well, around the country, there's about 46 million people who fall into the category of no non-insured or insured only part of the year.
In North Carolina, we know it's about 18%. That don't have health insurance.
And
in Mecklenburg
higher.
County, it's actually it's a little bit lower, 13.5% okay. In Mecklenburg County.
So now that means is that the uninsured or is that people who cannot afford to see a doctor?
That is people that have no health insurance of any kind. That doesn't mean that they wouldn't be able to purchase health care out of pocket. That just means they're not covered by an insurance.
But if you have no insurance, what does that mean? Put that into some sort of perspective for people today.
Well, you know, most of us who are insured know that systemically we've got two forms of health care in this country. We've got private health and we've got public health. And both of them require an access card. And that access card is issued by an insurance plan, whether that plan is Medicaid on the public health system side or Medicare. Or if that access plan on the private health system side is issued by many of our private health insurance companies, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, whatever your company is. So without that card, you become this distinct, unusual being, and the healthcare provider system tries to find a place for you. You don't have a natural place for entry into the healthcare system.
Most people that have healthcare insurance have it through their employment. Now, that is a very complex system because there's all kinds of incentives that really don't show up. There are incentives for the company and there are incentives for the individual because, you know, you pay so much health care, then you get a tax deduction for it. But what it does not mean is that all people that work have insurance because actually quite a few people that are working work for small companies who do not offer health care insurance programs.
Or who make them or offer it, but the employee
well,
has to help
too, it's
pay for
much
it.
Too expensive.
Right.
It's too expensive.
And that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because that's a significant population of folks who are falling into the uninsured company category. The working poor who, and some of them are working for very major institutions or both nonprofit and for-profit companies. And these are folks who are offered health insurance, but they're offered it at the same level as people who are making a lot more money within the company. And I'll give you an example. There are some hospitals in America that offer health insurance to their employees, and in fact, almost all hospitals offer health insurance to their employees, but they pay the same as the doctor. You know, so the unit secretary is trying to pay the same amount for her health care coverage as the physician, you know, and that's just not fair.
Mm-hmm.
So she opts out and she falls into this category of the uninsured.
Now, a lot of people don't like to talk about these health care plans that the candidates have proposed and don't want to talk about universal health care or single, whatever you want to call it. because they think that their money, their tax dollars, are going to go to a bunch of people who are freeloading and who could work but don't work, etc. And there are a lot of people out there that you just brought up that are working. They just can't afford the insurance. And if you can't afford insurance, what does that mean to you if you need to see a physician or if you need a procedure? What does that mean to you?
Well, first of all, it means you get charged a lot higher rate.
Exactly.
So the very people that can't afford it are the ones that have to pay a much higher cost, because that's the way that the costs are structured. Because if you are a healthcare insurer and you say you have agreements with large companies, then you necessarily discount the rates to leverage the greater volume.
So those people without insurance are paying for those who are getting discounts?
That is one way to look at it.
Absolutely. And that's a very, very important factor, because what you brought up, you're right, is one of the arguments that's used very often to ignore the facts. The facts are that folks who pay out of pocket, people who are uninsured, pay more for the same exact service as people who are insured, right? So when you talk about who's covering who, the truth is the burden of the healthcare system falls very heavily on the uninsured.
So those of us with insurance, we have a little problem when we go to see the doctor, and maybe he does some blood work and a couple of other lab tests, and we walk away with our $25, $10, whatever it is, copay, and maybe our $500 deductible or whatever it is over the course of a year. If I didn't have insurance and I had the exact same condition and the doctor ran the exact same lab work tests, et cetera, what would that cost me on average?
It could be as much as $500 or $800.
And the people who are walking in the door with no insurance because they can't afford insurance, how can they afford that?
Well, either they don't pass what we call the wallet biopsy or the green screen, or in some cases they may be put on a sliding fee scale, or they may be put into a time payment plan.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just talking about an office visit. If somebody has a serious illness, for example, a diagnosis of cancer or a serious trauma, let's say somebody is riding a bicycle and gets hit by a car, you know, when you're looking about $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 for hospital and physician costs, you know, that's almost an overwhelming burden.
How many people are turned away in this country? How many people are turned away in this county because they have no insurance and they can't afford to pay?
Well, you know, it's hard to measure the number of people who are turned away because nobody's counting that. You know what I mean? And that when somebody walks in and asks for care, there's nobody at the front desk who's checking a box that says we couldn't care for them today. And a lot of times what we do is we put them in a charity pool and we say we're paying for their services through a charity pool. But often that pool also includes people who are in the bad debt situation. And what that is, that's somebody who could have paid but then doesn't pay. And so we write them into the same pool. I think what is critical to know is that there are 54.6 million Americans who, by virtue of the fact that they are impoverished or in the middle income, but the lower end of the middle income, are at risk of falling into being uninsured in this next 10 years. And when you look at what our Congress did recently in the bankruptcy laws and exempting people who have health insurance or health care debt from being able to file bankruptcy, recognizing that health care debt is one of the leading reasons why families have to file bankruptcy, again, you've taken this pool of very risky people and you've said to them, even though you're working, and 85% are, by the way, even though you're working, even though you're trying, we're going to say, we're not going to give you a hand up, and we're not going to make sure that we level the playing field or make it fair for you to access service.
So even though you're charging people a lot more who don't have insurance, if they can't pay it, what is the cost to the system? Who ultimately pays the fees?
Well, the answer to that question is that ultimately we all do. And one of the arguments against reforming healthcare is, oh, well, you know, you'd have to necessarily put in a system of rationing healthcare. What we fail to recognize or don't want to recognize is that right now we already ration it. We just ration it in an irrational way.
And the other argument is that we can't afford it. We can't afford to have national health care because Americans are not. I just had the ambassador to France on the program last week, earlier this week? I can't remember. but the French have this, what they consider to be a wonderful health care program where nobody falls through the cracks, but their income taxes are 45% to 50%, and I'm not sure Americans would stand for that. Right. But what's it costing us now?
Exactly. That's exactly. Such a false argument, because we actually are paying 17% of our gross national product is spent on health and health care services, yet we have some of the worst health outcomes of any industrialized nation. So where France and other European nations have gotten their act together and decided to be inclusive in their policies, what we've decided to do is ignore the obvious, mm-hmm. that we're paying for a lot of really bad health care, right? We're paying for services to be delivered at the highest end of the healthcare spectrum. So we will pay for somebody to go to an emergency room, but we will not pay for primary care or preventive health services or immunizations or things that would prevent them from having a heart attack later on.
Why does it cost more to go to the emergency room?
Part of it is because of the technological advances that have, by which many people have benefited in this country. I mean, we have by a lot of people's accounts, the best medical treatment in the world. And I think mm-hmm. that argument can be made. The diagnostics, the treatments, they're very high tech. They're very good, mm-hmm. But they're very expensive. And emergency departments and surgical suites, that's where a lot of those high tech, inventions are applied. And it's also where, a lot of specialized care is provided. And, you know, when you have an emergency, you need very high level care right now, and you need it delivered in a the best way possible. So that costs something.
Hmm. So when you talk about access to health care, how would you define that? Is it just the ability for everybody to go, no matter what their economic situation is?
Well, exactly. You know, it is rather a simplistic definition. Access really has nothing to do with insurance. A lot of people think that having insurance gives you access, but what we know nationally is that there are some people who have Medicaid or have Medicare. They are insured, but they don't have quality access, right? And so what that means is that there are physicians all across the country who still turn people away who have Medicaid or Medicare.
Because the reimbursement
is not as high, or because the patient pool that have those types of insurance are high-risk pools. They're people who have lots of chronic disease. They're people who were not brought into the healthcare system early enough that they are now healthy. Instead, they are living a chronically diseased life. And that's a bigger burden on the system, and folks turn them away.
Dr. Gloria Wilder is the former medical director of mobile health programs at D.C.'s Children's Hospital. Dr. Stephen Keener is the medical director of the Mecklenburg County Health Department, and they're here with us in advance of the third annual, help me out here, doctor, third annual
Mecklenburg County Forum.
Thank you. Health Forum. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by the UPS stores of Charlotte, offering packaging and shipping solutions to businesses of all sizes with digital color printing and copying, mailboxes, and other services. Locations at theupsstore.com. And by the College Foundation of North Carolina, offering the North Carolina 529 plan with multiple investment options for North Carolina parents and grandparents, cfnc.org. It is not unusual for Hollywood actors and actresses to get out there and campaign for candidates or political causes in which they believe in. But at least one actress this year is doing that in an unusual way. Academy Award nominee Virginia Madsen is stumping the country with her mother, who is a documentary filmmaker, encouraging women to express themselves in life, politics, and beauty by voting for what they believe in. There's more to this, and Virginia Madsen will join us Monday at 9 to tell us.
When does public radio remind you of great food? Are you thinking when Ira Glass is zesty and Scott Simon's commentary is like a chewy bagel? No. The answer is when you carry the WFAE member card, yours automatically and good for a year when you support WFAE at $120 or more. It'll give you dozens of two-for-one dining opportunities throughout the area and over 500 statewide with our dining partners who want you to think of good food when you think about great radio. You can pledge now at WFAE.org.
The Friday News Roundup. Senator Clinton wins in Pennsylvania and keeps the race for the Democratic presidential nomination going. Senate Republicans block an equal pay bill, and the Pentagon is accused of using retired military personnel to create favorable news coverage. The Diane Rehm Show, Friday.
From 10 to noon, here on 90.7 FM WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. In the studio with us is Dr. Gloria Wilder, who's the president and CEO of Core Health, which is a relatively new organization. Which does what, doctor?
We actually provide consulting services to nonprofits all across the country who are working in communities, and we help them become outcome-focused.
I don't know what that means.
That means that we want to make sure that their solutions actually change lives. You know, that when we're funding nonprofits to do work, we want to make sure that at the end of the day, folks are better because they were there.
Okay. And also with us in the studio is Dr. Stephen Keener, Medical Director of the Mecklenburg County Health Department. And joining us now is Dr. John Klimas with Carolina Asthma and Allergy in Charlotte and Rock Hill, and a volunteer doctor with Physicians Reach Out. That's a division of the Mecklenburg County Medical Society, which provides health care access to low-income, uninsured residents of the county. And Dr. Klimas joins us from Rock Hill.
Good morning.
Good morning. Did I say your name correctly?
Klimas.
Klimas, I'm sorry, Klimas. Well, there you go. It's my day for mispronunciation. You're involved as a doctor, as I just said, with Physicians Reach Out. How does that program work, Dr. Klimas?
Well, Physicians Reach Out is a Mecklenburg County Medical Society project delivering high-quality care to the poor and sick of Mecklenburg County. It is a network of close to 1,300 dedicated physicians who actually see patients free of charge who qualify. We also have low copays for radiologic services, hospital services, and we get free medications through the generosity of Medisys. So we actually, over the past 3.5 to 4 years, have seen 5,000 patients. We currently have about 1,500 active patients and delivered about $17 to $18 million worth of free care.
And who pays the cost for the care that the patients can't afford to pay for? There are obviously hard costs involved in this.
Well, we donate our services, mm-hmm. and the hospital basically donates their services for our patients. These are patients who are 200% of poverty level, which in a single individual makes $20,000 a year. They are not insured. They don't qualify for Medicaid or Medicare or the CHIPS program. They have to be Mecklenburg County residents. And so we have a screening process to make sure that they're truly qualified, truly indigent. And actually, about 60% of our patients are 100% of poverty level, which is around 10 or 12,000.
Dr. Wilder, you used to run the mobile health program for the D.C. Children's Hospital, and that was literally mobile vans. It was a doctor's office on wheels.
Right.
And you went into neighborhoods in southeast Washington and Anacostia and areas like that where the population is poor.
Right.
And on a regular basis, once a week, you'd be in a certain location, and you would provide medical care for children. And since you're involved in the same thing, Dr. Klimas, it's a kind of the same thing, how should we feel as Americans in the richest nation in the world in the 21st century that we have to have organizations like the two of yours?
Well, you know, I will tell you, I'm glad you asked the question because, frankly, I think the work of any nonprofit should ultimately be to go out of business, right? When we go out of business, it means that the need is gone. And what I, in my 15 years of being on mobile units, discovered is we were not going out of business. Business was growing by leaps and bounds. And some of the folks we were seeing were folks who were once social workers, once nursing assistants, who had fallen below the poverty line because maybe one child got sick, you know, a diagnosis of cancer, a child who falls from a playground swing and ends up permanently disabled is enough to drop the family into poverty, even when people are working. So if I could get a message across to your audience, it would be that there, but for the grace of God, go on.
Similar situation for you, Dr. Klimas?
Yeah, I think until the healthcare system, which is broken down, obviously, is fixed. I think we are a safety net program. We've given hope to a lot of patients who have no other source. I mean, the first patient we had is a typical patient. He lost his job, was on COBRA for 18 months, had $250 to $300 worth of bills for hypertension, medicines, for ulcer medicines, and was just at his wit's end. And then we gave him the hope and the care that he needed. And that's what we do for a lot of patients.
Had you not been there, what would have happened to him?
I think he probably would have stopped taking his medications. He said, and he gives me a hug every time I see him. he says, "You saved my life."
But now, Dr. Keener, a lot of people out there might be thinking, well, that's what the health department is for, isn't it?
Well, actually, the health department is a little bit different. There are health departments around the country, and certainly some in North Carolina, that do provide primary care health services. But we're fortunate in Mecklenburg County to have the availability of primary care. It's not enough, but it's certainly a lot more than a lot of places have. And really the core mission of public health is to focus on certain governmental public health activities which involve the assessment of community health problems, the development of policies and plans that will address those problems in a population-based way, and then the assurance that those plans are carried out and that they are effective. And so that's kind of a cycle of activity that goes on constantly. And one of the things that the health department is really on the hook for, obviously, is this whole question of the availability and the accessibility of healthcare to its citizens.
Now, all three of the presidential candidates have put forth some sort of healthcare plan that they say they want to see put into action should they gain the White House. But this third Mecklenburg County Public Health Forum is addressing something I don't believe, I could be wrong, is in any of the candidates' plans, and that is something called appropriateness of care. What does that mean?
Well, one of the bases of care for every person, from the moment they're born to the moment they pass on, is having a medical home, having a primary care physician or nurse practitioner or other health provider who looks at their general health and wellness and associates that health and wellness with both their socioeconomic status, the environment they live in, their education, their jobs and careers in the future, and helps them to live a holistically well life. Now, this is something that we who have been insured for a long time take for granted. We know who our physicians are. We know who our healthcare provider is. We know if we have a question, we know who to call. Like that, but that lack of a medical home for the majority of families who are served by the public health system is a real danger in this country.
If you don't have a medical home, are you always starting at ground zero when you see a doctor? Because the doctor doesn't know you, doesn't know your history,
right?
Although he could probably get access to your history, one would think.
Well, it just depends on where you're getting health care. If you're getting health care on a mobile unit, the doctor might not be able to get access to your health history. You know, now a lot of our mobile units, we have electronic medical records, and so we can have access to people who have seen us before. But not for somebody who's just walking in blind off the street.
For your patients at the Physicians Reach Out, is that a major concern, Dr. Clemens?
It certainly is. And most patients, a lot of patients who don't have a medical doctor, a regular primary care physician, in fact, I think at University Hospital, 40% of patients go to the emergency room do not have a primary care physician, go to the emergency room. And it's expensive care, as Dr. Keener was talking about. So we are trying to get everybody who comes into our system gets organized and gets hooked up with a primary care physician as a medical home. They can see subspecialists if they need to or whatever, but you do need that medical home that's a consistent caregiving thing. I used to work in a homeless shelter down the men's thing, and it was like Band-Aid therapy. You'd see a patient, you give them medicine, in a couple of weeks they'd be back. And it's not good, consistent care. And what you want is good, consistent care from a primary care physician.
The literature for this third annual health conference says that positive health outcomes are increased and dollars are saved when an individual can readily access preventive care and treatment that is timely, affordable, culturally sensitive, and clearly communicated. So if we're having trouble in this country paying for acute care after the fact, how can we afford to pay for preventive care for the uninsured?
We can't afford not to. You know, I mean, if you look at what we're paying for right now, we're paying for end-of-life care. We're paying for the preparation for your death. I mean, and that's the truth. We pay for chronic disease. As soon as you get a disease, suddenly you fit into a category that we will pay for. When you've got diabetes, we've got programs to put you into. When you have hypertension, right? If you become HIV positive, in almost every state in the nation now, when you become HIV positive, you'll get medication and treatment. Right. But if you're not HIV positive, we won't give you anything. We won't give you preventive health services or a primary care visit. So, I mean, we really have to look at where the dollars are being spent. As I said, 17% of the gross national product is spent on health, but it's spent on the preparation for how you are going to pass away, whether it will be from your chronic disease or old age. We will spend the money at the end of life. And what we're saying is let's focus on primary care, preventive services.
So what is, give me an example of what a preventive service might be.
Education on nutrition and fitness.
A screening physical exam, immunizations, at certain points
so,
in
so
life.
So in other words, most of these people, I would imagine, and you can continue this in a second, but most of the people who are uninsured and can't afford a doctor visit don't get physicals, so they don't know that they're borderline hypertensive.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm sorry. So if they knew that, then you could take preventive measures that would save money in the long run.
Like, I think hypertension is a great example. If you find somebody that has hypertension, then it's easy enough to put them on an antihypertensive medication and keep their blood pressure low. If you don't, then you end up getting kidney damage and a whole host of other problems, coronary artery disease that ends up in strokes and heart attacks and people having to go on dialysis, which obviously are very, very expensive enterprises.
Dr. Clemens?
I would say the same thing with asthma, for instance, which I treat a lot. If you have a patient who's uncontrolled, they go to the emergency room, it's expensive therapy. If you can control them, keep their asthma under good control, they won't have to have the expensive emergency treatment and or die.
So how do we make this affordable?
Well, one thing that's been proposed by public health circles, and this goes back to the health reform efforts back in the 90s, and this is somewhat tongue in cheek, but I think it's kind of cute. The old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Mm-hmm.
We should just take the entire healthcare budget and take about 6% of it and put that into public health programs. That's 1/16 of the total.
Okay. One of the things that I mentioned in this statement in the literature about today's conference about preventive health care is that the care and treatment should be culturally sensitive. What does that mean?
Well, you know, it means different things for different populations. But overall, I think what we're talking about here is making sure that there's a diversity of providers that are highly trained, highly skilled in every community across the country. So if you are an African-American or a Latino patient, if your first language is not English, you can get quality health care services where you live. As long as we have a good stream of diverse student population coming into the medical professions, we will have diverse providers across the country. Historically, we all know that the healthcare system has historically not been a very diverse system, especially at the top of the healthcare ranks. And still now in our country, 87% of people who run healthcare organizations are Caucasian, right? And we have not broken that glass ceiling both in gender or culture.
Excuse my ignorance. I understand the language barriers with Hispanic population, but why does it matter in an urban situation, in an urban setting where most of the patients might be African-American, that the doctor is white?
Well, you know, in the one-to-one relationship on that day, it may or may not matter depending on the doctor's exposure, right, making sure that they have had a diverse training in multiple cultures, right? But when you look at the system of healthcare and how healthcare dollars are spent, that's where the difference really occurs. When the folks who are deciding where healthcare dollars are spent, they may not be able to prioritize fully the need need within a community if they have never been exposed in a significant way to that community. And so around that board table, you need diversity of opinions to drive good health care.
So are you saying that the problem with the imbalance, the racial imbalance on the doctor side of the equation, is that some of these doctors may not realize that they're seeing just the tip of the iceberg?
Right. And they need to have different opinions. You know, when doctors, one of the things we're good for doing is consulting with each other mm-hmm. about a patient and a patient's need. But if everybody you consult with has grown up just like you and had the same exposures you had, and you never were poor, or you never lived in a barrio, or you didn't come from an Indian reservation, then it might be difficult for you to really provide the full breadth of what that patient needs.
You echo that opinion, Dr. Clemens?
I think most physicians still see patients regardless of race, color, creed, or background, and just try to deliver the best care they can. And obviously, we try to be culturally sensitive. Actually, 57% of our patients are Hispanic now in this program. So, and we have actually translators, and we try to be as culturally sensitive as we can, but it's difficult. I mean, you know, we all don't have the same background. But we do the best we can.
If you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE. You can email us at charlottetalks@WFAE.org, or you can join us on our blog, Charlotte Blogs, on the front page of WFAE.org. Gene in Gastonia writes, I know some people that are covered by a certain insurance company. I won't mention any names. Thank you, Gene. But this company takes so long to pay, and it pays so little that a lot of physicians will not accept this insurance. Also, copays for tests are so outrageously expensive. The people are having to make a choice between food and gas and having a test to determine their illness. I'm ashamed to hear friends make statements like this and realize that we are such a rich country, yet we can't get our health care commitment to the American people together. It isn't just uninsured. It also includes the poorly insured, correct?
Or underinsured.
Absolutely correct.
Okay. You founded, as I said a second ago, Dr. Wilder, Core Health, which assists healthcare providers to underserved populations improve the quality of the care that they provide. And you say that a well community provides strong quality healthcare, education, housing, food, and economic opportunity for its residents. Are you saying here that it's not just the healthcare system
exactly.
that's broken? It's the whole kit and caboodle. The society at large is ill.
Yes, and I wish I could take credit for that, but the World Health Organization said health is not the absence of disease, and that is literally the mantra for all healthcare providers across the world, knowing that the health of our patients really is determined by the multiple factors of the environment they're living in, the community you're living in. It's hard to separate yourself from that community. If you are living in a violent community, if you're living in a community where your children can't go outside and play and you don't feel comfortable letting them go through the door, if you're living in a community that has unstable food access, you know, and your kids are only getting food when they go to school, that means that Monday through Friday they eat at the public schools, but the weekends they don't. That is not a healthy community. And so we can throw a lot of medicine at you, and we can be there giving you the best advice, but the truth is if you can't buy quality foods, then you can't have a healthy life.
We're going to take a break here and continue our conversation and go to the phones as well when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by Dixon Hughes, PLLC, Certified Public Accountants and Advisors, combining resources of a Southeast-based accounting firm and customizing service teams to client requirements at dixon-hughes.com. And by Catawba College Salisbury, discover an education rich in personal attention that blends the liberal arts with career preparation. Details at catawba.edu. Coming up at 10 o'clock, it's the Weekly News Roundup, the National Hour on the Diane Reem Show, because it's Friday. Senator Clinton wins in Pennsylvania, keeps the race for the Democratic presidential nomination going. Senate Republicans block an equal pay bill, and the Pentagon is accused of using retired military personnel to create favorable news coverage. That's in the first hour, just some of the stories they'll touch upon. In the international hour at 11, President Bush is promoting David Petraeus, the top general in Iraq, to lead the U.S. Central Command. A videotape shows North Koreans at a secret Syrian facility believed to be a nuclear reactor, and China recalls a shipment of arms en route to Zimbabwe. That's coming up at 11 o'clock, and you can join their conversation as well as ours. Here's how you do ours, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, charlottetalks@WFAE.org, or Charlotte Blogs on the front page of our website. And we're back in 60 seconds.
I'm Gabriella Saubert, and I listen to Morning Edition. You know, I have a long commute, about an hour. It's on a major highway, just straight.
Listening on your daily commute? We've got stories so compelling.
Before I realized that the story's over, and I was a good 20 minutes past my exit.
Though we don't intend to make you miss your exit, metro stop, or anything else, get a little lost in Morning Edition from NPR News.
With regional news, weather, and traffic, weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
Even in show business, your family will always tell you the truth.
But it was great, because my brother was basically the touchstone that who was saying, kept saying, yeah, but it's rubbish, isn't it? Or, and, yeah, it's not any good. Not very good.
Comedian Eddie Izzard on Family Reviews, doing stand-up in French, and playing a con artist on TV. Next time on Bob Edwards Weekend from PRI. Sundays from 2 to 4 p.m. on 90.7 WFAE.
We're back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Gloria Wilder, the president and CEO of Core Health and the former director of mobile health programs at Children's Hospital in Washington, is with us. Dr. Stephen Keener, also here in the studio, medical director of the Mecklenburg County Health Department. And on the phone from Rock Hill, this is Dr. John Klimas, a physician with Carolina's Asthma and Allergy, and also, I believe, one of the organizers, the original organizers for, and a volunteer physician for Physicians Reach Out in Mecklenburg County. Am I right about that, doctor?
Yes.
Well, congratulations. And thank you. Let's take some phone calls here from folks, and we'll continue our conversation about health care, et cetera. Amy, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks. I'm on the show?
Yes, you are. I think.
Oh, okay.
Let me check. Yes, you are. Yes.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks for taking my call. And I wanted to address something. I believe it was Dr. Wilder had said something about cancer care coming to about $30,000 or $40,000 15 minutes ago or so. But I just wanted to tell you last spring, about a year ago, as a matter of fact, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And between, cancer care is astronomically expensive. Between the surgeries and the chemotherapy and the ongoing care that I will have for 5 years with an oncologist, when we looked at the bills, the total cost will be about $150,000 for the total care, and about $10,000 will be out of pocket, which is... it's not catastrophic for us. It's a big chunk of money for us. But so people who are talking about why don't people have their own health insurance and why should we pay, I just want to tell you that the cost of $150,000 is much more expensive than probably single-payer care will be. And also, I used to be a school health nurse, and I know at the health department there are screening mammograms and screening for cervical cancer and other types of screening that can go on. So I do want to, at least that was my experience when I was with the health department, so good for them. But I do want to tell people that the cost of cancer care and sometimes chronic care is just astronomically expensive.
Okay. Amy, thank you for your call. Yes, go ahead, doctor. Yes, please.
The delay in treatment is a major problem with the uninsured. There's a higher rate of cancer and deaths from breast cancer because of delay in treatment and mammograms in the uninsured versus the insured women.
Is that because they delay seeking care for their treatment, or is it because they don't get the preventative health care checkups?
And
probably
therefore, both.
So it's both.
You know, and there's also a higher rate of cancer of the colon in men, the same thing, delay in treatment and diagnosis.
I think it goes into all the things we've been talking about, the availability of care, mm-hmm. the accessibility of the care, and the appropriateness of the care. I mean, if you go to a family doctor and they don't do a breast physical examination, or they don't prescribe a mammogram when it's indicated, then obviously you're not going to early detect a breast cancer.
And men are the worst. They put off all kinds of doctor's visits.
Yes, we don't go to doctors.
Much more attuned to medical care.
Men like to become doctors. They don't like to visit them.
And in response to our last caller, you know, one of the things that I hope we all take away from this is that a person who gets a diagnosis of cancer or any other serious illness should not have to worry about the cost of care in a nation as wealthy as our nation, where we are spending 17% of our gross national product on health.
Well, Dr. Erwin Redliner, I think that's how you say his name, he's the founder of the New York Children's Health Fund, and he was quoted in an article in the Washington Post about your former mobile clinics at the Children's Hospital in Washington, is saying that the underlying problem with health care here is that Americans, regardless of political party, feel that health insurance is a privilege that you have to purchase and not a right. Is he correct? And is it a privilege?
Health insurance and health care is not a privilege. It absolutely should be a right. But in our nation, we have not decided that we will make health access a right of every person who is in the United States.
Because I had I think he was a libertarian on this program about a year ago, and he said that health care is not a human right.
I think it depends on what you're talking about. There are certain things that I believe should be a right, and that would be adequate prenatal care, obstetrical services, certain immunizations and screenings. And I believe the availability of some of those services, for example, immunizations funded by the government, lends credence to that opinion. However, I don't believe it is a right for someone to say they should get a total body CT scan every year just because they want to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that is something that certainly should be a privilege. I mean, I don't care if a bank executive wants to get a CT scan, but I feel like he or she ought to pay for it out of their own pocket.
Right. So when you talk about health, just like when we talk about any other civil right, there has to be definitions and limits to what we're saying and the access approach to health. But the problem right now in our country is that we have not decided as a nation that this is a basic right. So far in our country, we have made a very clear decision that some people will have access and others will not.
You mentioned civil rights, and I know that one of the reasons you became a doctor is because you see this as a social justice issue, and it came from some of the words of Martin Luther King Jr. You grew up in the Bedford-Stuyvesant area of New York, which is a very poor area of New York, and you went through, as a patient, the public health system of its day. And you say that you were traumatized by that system and that patients in that system were made to feel embarrassed by the medical professionals because they didn't have enough money to pay. Is that still the case for underprivileged people who have to take advantage of free health care, in many cases in public hospitals? Are they getting substandard care? Are they getting attitude?
I personally think that it's not the case in some places, and it is the case in others. And the challenge with the public health system is that we don't measure quality as well as we should. And that bar has been lowered for the public health system, because the truth about it is we're trying to take care of such a huge volume of need that quality becomes the second step in the day-to-day of any public health provider. And it's not that we mean it to happen. We're all trained physicians. We're all dedicated to our patients. But the truth is that when you're seeing a number of folks who have major chronic illnesses, who have not been taken care of for a long time, sometimes the best you can do is give that prescription when really you know that patient needs more intensive services.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. Willis in Charlotte, you're on WFAE.
Yes, thank you, Mike. Good morning, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to offer an opinion about one of the causes of the current crisis, and that is, to me, the abandonment of what used to be called, and you never hear the term anymore, major medical. As far as being insured, as an example, my family is insured through an employer. I get a physical examination every year. I know that my children need immunizations periodically, you know, certain diagnostic procedures periodically. There's no real reason to insure for this. I mean, to me, insurance is supposed to be for the unexpected. If you insure, you know, such that patients can get expected and scheduled annual physicals and the like, then it seems to me that you're just adding a bureaucratic layer or an obstruction between the caregiver and the patient. And the last source that I checked said that informed me that now like 30 cents of every healthcare dollar is spent on administering payment to make sure that that basically these are folks that are in between the doctor and the patient or the physical therapist and the patient, what have you, and that this number is growing instead of getting smaller. It's on its way to becoming a full third of healthcare expenses. And I was just wondering if your panelists would speak to that, please. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're right on point with the fact that providing primary care and preventive health services to everybody as the standard in the United States, as the right in the United States, then allows us to take the population that is in the higher risk pool and say they need to be insured for other things, or those of us who have a larger income may select to purchase more insurance for extra risks that we're going to absorb in our life. But the problem is right now we haven't decided that there is a basic standard of health care for every citizen in the United States.
Can we afford to insure basic health care? And basic health care would be more than just annual physicals. It would seem to me that a lot of people abuse insurance today, that people with low copays and low deductibles go to the doctor when they get a sniffle. And they want an antibiotic, and the antibiotic isn't going to treat it, but that's what they want, and they can afford to do that because it's $10.
Well, I think I think the crux of the issue is whether you're going to talk about insuring or providing, and that's where a lot of the difference of the opinion occurs. But I think what Dr. Wilder said, how can we afford not to provide those things that are so essential to basic health?
But his concept, Willis's concept, is that insurance should be for catastrophic things, not for daily health care, not for going to the doctor because you have the flu. You go to the doctor, you pay for your flu visit. A lot of people can't afford to pay for their flu visit. So how do we accomplish both? Because I've been told by some doctors that the presidential candidate's health care plans are absolutely unaffordable.
Well, they certainly have to come up with a way of trying to pay them, because that is the issue. Is if you're talking about increasing the amount of services that are going to be provided, which we certainly are, then you either have to pay for that out of new money, or you have to cut back on some of the things that you're already doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether it's best to talk about insuring some of those basic services, or whether it's better to talk about providing them.
If we had some sort of a system that either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or even John McCain are talking about providing if they become president, Dr. Clemmis, would it put you out of business?
It would help, and I'd love to be out of business for the Physicians Reach Out program. What you're talking about, though, in terms of the catastrophic insurance and versus basic, is actually a health care savings account, where you have a high deductibility, like $2,900 per year for an individual, and then above a certain amount, it kicks into catastrophic. And that's where people say, okay, I may go to a doctor, I may not have to, I may get this prescription, I may not have to. And I think they're much more acutely aware of costs, because today with third-party payment, you have no idea of costs. And that's one of the reasons why I think medical costs are skyrocketing.
Willis, thank you for your call. Kathy writes, drug manufacturers ask one of your panel to explain the role of these huge international companies that they play in keeping health costs so high for U.S. citizens, because we do pay more for drugs than almost any country in the world. We seem to pay the freight on all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where we talk about market economies and really looking at the influence we allow to happen. And again, it's about deciding that healthcare is a right. When healthcare becomes a right, then the multiple companies, including the drug companies, that now have a stronghold on our healthcare dollar, mm-hmm. will have to compete fairly. What's happening now is unfair competition in that market.
Given the high cost of pharmaceuticals and the high cost of medical care, why are these drug companies advertising minute by minute on television at hundreds of thousands of dollars a commercial to the general public, when all of these are prescription medications for the most part?
Because it's highly profitable.
If they stopped it, would the drug prices go down?
Well, no, they'd find another way to make the profit. Yeah. Until we make a decision in our country to control health care costs, we're going to continue to see the market drive the costs. And this is, honestly, that's good business on the part of the pharmaceutical companies. If you own stock, you should be very happy. But if you're a person who needs health care, you should be very concerned.
John McCain says the biggest problem with the American health care system is that it's too expensive. It costs too much. He's probably right. But how do you get the costs down? What do you do?
I think part of that goes back to the appropriateness question and trying to decide which services need to be the ones that, that are covered or that are insured or that are provided. And obviously that's the big debate because that's the one thing that not anybody can agree on.
Okay. Right. Let's just see if we have time for another call or two very quickly. Wilson in Salisbury, you're on WFAE.
Hello, this is Marital Wilson in Salisbury.
Yes, go ahead.
I came on late, about 9:30, but I want to point out a couple of things, maybe just two things. It might have been addressed before. I'm not sure if it has now. But providing health care in and of itself may not be the complete answer. Because one is, particularly from the minorities, as they call us, African-Americans, whatever, is the idea of, can I trust them to give me the kind of care that I need? It's a matter of trust, particularly when you go to establishment that is controlled or administered mainly by the European Americans. Can I trust them? And the second thing is that a lot of the folks who administer care have grown up in an atmosphere where they are suspicious or have a negative attitude about those from other cultures. Now, this may, they may not even be consciously aware of it, but it comes through sometimes in the schools, comes through in the community, come through movies and other media.
So what do you do about that?
What I do, well, they have to, as the lady said earlier, they have to do some of the training, a kind of a sensitivity training, I guess you call it, a cultural training, realizing that the only difference between black and white is the melanin in the skin.
Well, okay, when that obviously works both ways. So you're talking about training the physicians and training the patients. How do you do that? I have like 10 seconds. How do you do that?
You know, it's going to occur when we start to have more honest conversation and say to each other that when we talk about race, it doesn't mean we're racist. And when we talk about issues of income, it doesn't mean we're elitist. We have to have these conversations and include everybody at the table.
Dr. Gloria Wilder's president and CEO of CORE Health. Dr. Stephen Keener is medical director of the Mecklenburg County Health Department. And joining us by phone for part of the program was Dr. John Clemens, physician with Carolina Asthma and Allergy and a volunteer physician with Physicians Reach Out. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our senior producer is Wendy Herkey. The associate producer is Tim Ross. Aaron Sutton is our research assistant, and our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, go to WFAE.org.
And our program is made possible today by Taylor Richards and Conger and the Italian Trade Commission, inviting listeners to experience Italy in motion April 25th and 26th, featuring Italian clothing, transportation, wine, and cuisine. Details at trcstyle.com. And by Home Instead, senior care of Charlotte, from companionship to home helper to personal care services for a few hours up to 24-hour care. Details at homeinsteadcharlotte.com or 704-344-0801.
I accept your nomination for president of the...
Staging a political convention costs hundreds of millions of dollars. The bulk of the tab gets paid by host committees that aren't subject to campaign finance rules.
It's a way that unlimited contributions get back into the federal system.
The host committee loophole, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered this afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on 90.7 FM, WFAE, your NPR news source.
I'm Mike Collins. It's not unusual for Hollywood actors and actresses to get involved in national politics, but this political year, at least one Hollywood actress is involved in an unusual way. Academy Award nominee Virginia Madsen is going around the country encouraging women to express themselves in life, politics, and beauty by voting for what they believe in. She also is encouraging them to register to vote in this historic election year. Virginia Mattson tells us more when Charlotte Talks, Monday at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. Partly sunny, highs around 80 today, upper 50s tonight, and around 70 tomorrow with a chance of showers through the weekend. It's 70 now at WFAE Charlotte, WFHE Hickory.
From W.